This is good. This is good. I'm so happy to be here tonight. I've been spending a bunch of time on Zoom. It's crazy. That little webcam, it adds like 6 inches to my forehead. It makes it look like my eyebrows and my hairline are social distancing.
Or there's something Moses parted so the children of Israel could walk across. I'm clickbait for people with a thing for coneheads. It's crazy. That little webcam, it makes it look like if you wanted to travel from my eyebrows to my hairline, it'd take like $30 on Uber. Obviously, I suffer with male pattern baldness, MPB. It's no big deal, right? I mean, who wouldn't want to have a huge forehead and a big old yarmulke-like hair-free zone on the back of their head? It's every young man's dream. Hey, Dad, when I grow up, I want to have a comb-over just like the Donald. Crazy. I have not lost the capacity to produce hair. That's the weirdest thing about it. I can produce hair, but only in places where nobody would want it. Like my knuckles, my kneecaps, my pillowcase. It's very sexy. If all you had to go on was just a glimpse of my unshaved shoulders, you might think growing hair is my superpower. Clogging a drain by taking a single shower, he could trigger a gag reflex by wearing a tank top. He's Fur Boy. I carry a personal hair trimmer with me at all times, because in less than an hour, I could spawn a 3-inch eyebrow hair. It is a serious... I go to the barber now. He spends more time trimming the hair in my nose and my ears than he does maintaining my clown ring. If I go swimming, I'm wearing a swim shirt. It's to protect the innocent bystanders from the trauma of seeing the hair forest on my shoulders and lower back. If it is a superpower, dandruff is obviously the kryptonite, because ain't nothing happening up here. But spending all that time on those Zoom calls, I'm looking at myself on that computer monitor, and I'm like, I've got a turkey neck. I mean, I knew there was a jiggle when I jogged, but I thought it was these. It looks like male pattern baldness isn't the only thing I'm gonna inherit from mother. I don't know if you've had this happen. The other day I'm on a Zoom call and the host muted my video. Muted my video. I'm assuming people are distracted by the funhouse forehead. Possibly the turkey flap. The email from the HR lady said it was the sports bra. Okay. First of all, it was a tank top. I mean, come on! Second, she's never said anything about the whitey tighties. I mean, looks like I'm also gonna inherit a C cup from mother. Oh, technology, it's changed the way we do business. I mean, it will never be the same. Our meetings, it's changed the way we watch TV. I mean, TV is a new level. I mean, Netflix has revolutionized the way I consume content. And Cheetos. With Netflix, when my keister hits the couch, it activates my pie hole. If I'm viewing, I'm chewing. My wife has started to call them Netflix picnics. I don't know whether you know this, but acid indigestion, acid reflux, these are nature's appetite suppressants. That's what they're... Dude, if you won't stop eating when you're full, your body will give you heartburn and sleepless nights to try to get you to stop. You may be thinking, Tim, How's it possible for you to binge 4 solid hours of Tiger King and Tostitos?
I have a codependent Netflix partner. An enabler, if you will. Tums. Tums, yeah. I believe that Netflix, Frito-Lay, and Tums are some sort of demonic trinity. The spawn of Jenny Craig, probably funded by Bill Gates on behalf of the lap band lobby. Technology. So, to get a handle on these Netflix picnics, I downloaded a calorie counting app. Anybody? Yeah, those don't work. Is it weird that I lie about how much I've eaten on a calorie counting app that only I can see? Is that weird? I mean, who am I lying to? Oh, you're lying to yourself. No. There are a bunch of different people living inside of me. I think Socrates may have actually said, know thyselves. I mean, there is the glutton me who could pound a family-sized bag of Cheetos like it's an amuse-bouge. Oh, yeah, that was a delicious bag of Cheetos. But hey, I got 2 episodes left of Cheers on this season. I think I'll have me a bowl of chili and some powdered donuts. Get a little white powder to go with the orange powder. That'd look good. There's the poser me who cooks the books like he's a former Enron executive.
Okay, let's see. Cheetos, you know what? One bag, one serving. One serving of Cheetos. That, you know what? I'm gonna give myself 15 minutes of light exercise because I am sweating and short of breath.
Then there's the flat earther who somehow believes that what the poser records trumps what the glutton actually ate.
Hey, you know what? I read on Facebook where Cheetos are empty calories. I don't even know why you're putting a serving down. I mean, I guess just to be safe, but.
I told my therapist, I'm afraid I've got multiple personality disorder. She's like, you're not really smart enough to have multiple personality disorder. You're messed up, but it's just the one personality. As much as I sweat, you would think that I've got the metabolism of a hummingbird. You know what I mean? No. Got this friend Dylan. He reads one article in Men's Health magazine, and all of a sudden, he's an expert. Dude, your body's in hibernation mode. All you gotta do is eat more meals more often. It'll boost your metabolism, and the pounds will just melt away. Is that right? The reason we have so many fat kids in America is because they're not eating often enough. Oh, Dylan, I don't know what to do. Our 5th grader is 4'10", and he weighs 220 pounds. His body's in starvation mode. You should be getting him a Happy Meal on the way home from school every day. I'm convinced Dylan thinks Taylor Swift looks like that because she's getting more meals more often. Idiot. I do sweat a lot. And it's tough. It's tough dealing with the embarrassing sweat stains. I don't have to keep putting any perspirant on under my man boobs. You know, we live in a culture with a ton of ridiculous fashion fads and trends. Ripped skinny jeans. Seriously? You're paying extra for that? I mean, if somebody had come back to, I'm in high school, somebody from the future came back and said, hey, now, Tim, listen, in the future, you're going to be walking through Walmart. You're going to see people wearing nothing more than thick pantyhose with the feet knocked out of them, a tube top, and flip-flops. I'd be like, no way! Dude, some of them are going to be women. Blow my mind. And pit stains, as good as they look, they're never going to be a ridiculous fashion trend like yoga pants or rips. It's not happening. I'm never going to be walking down the street and hear some kids say, hey, dude, cool sweat crescents. It is not happening. I've got issues, but you know, fortunately, you know, technology is a little bit of a mixed blessing. I went onto my doctor's website, filled out some forms, and set an appointment. It was so convenient. But then when I got there, I had to fill out the same forms by hand. That's stupid, right? I mean, they confirmed my appointment by email, but I can't see my doctor unless I can balance this clipboard on my knee and handwrite my email address in a half-inch block. It's stupid. I'm sitting in chairs that are so close together, I'm sharing an armrest and my personal medical history with the person sitting next to me. I mean, by the time I got done with this, my heart rate, blood pressure, through the roof. I'm trying to explain to my doctor why my vitals are so out of whack. She has the audacity to prescribe Xanax. And 6 sessions of anger management. I gave her the name of a 5th grader who could teach a receptionist how to print out the stuff I'd given her online. I mean, come on! Oh, we. Obviously, I've got issues. I was at the doctor's office because of a video that my wife had taken in bed. You had this happen? Hey, Phil, I took a video in bed last night. I want you to watch it. I'm like, I was up for a movie. I found out I snore. Sounded like 2 bears fighting over a deer carcass. I mean, I was getting after it. And then all of a sudden just, nothing. I'm just catatonic. I'm not breathing, I'm just, for 26 seconds. I mean, and then it was like I was a bear hacking up a fur ball, you know. Really very sweet. She's like, Phil, you do this all night long. You've got sleep apnea. I mean, all night long, it's carcass, catatonic, furball, furball, catatonic, carcass, carcass, catatonic, furball. It's like, you've got to get it fixed. Everybody, here's the thing. We live in a polarized society right now. We do, but everybody agrees on the fix for sleep apnea. It is not in dispute. The deniers, the boosted vaxxers, all of us agree that if you have sleep apnea, you just get some hydrochloroquine and... No, that's a different thing. It's a CPAP machine, right? I mean, it's CPAP. Constant positive air pressure. You know, the thing, a little blower motor with a fan hooked up to a tube and a face mask makes a colostomy bag look like a fashion accessory. You know what I'm talking about? So I'm like, oh, I'll just give me a CPAP machine. I don't know whether you know. You cannot get a CPAP machine without a prescription. It can't be done. I mean, I tried Walmart, Amazon, the Russian black market. No. The CPAP lobby has this thing locked down. I'm thinking, man, these things must be dangerous. I did the research. I can't find one injury, much less a death, from a CPAP machine. They are safer than wheelchairs, humidifiers, catheters, all of which you can get, but not. Here's the deal. I could take you over to Home Depot right now, and for less than $100, I can get you an air compressor that'll blow a nail through that brick wall. No questions. No waiting. You want to get a machine that'll blow air up your nose so your wife can go to sleep? Dude, you're talking 4 doctor visits, 2 overnight sleep studies, 7 copays, just so you can get a prescription to shop for one of these things. The Second Amendment is in serious trouble. Serious trouble if these gun control people ever hook up with the CPAP lobby. We won't be able to own more than 25 or 30 handguns apiece. Obviously I have issues. And
I mean, I'd like to take personal responsibility for it, but it's so much easier to blame my parents. I'm a PK, preacher's kid. Any preacher's kids in the... A few? Okay, yeah. It's tough being a preacher's kid. It's not as common as the male pattern baldness, but it makes you just as self-conscious. And it's tough. And it's not just that all your Sundays are booked years in advance. It's more subtle than that. I mean, as a preacher's kid, if your mom ever says, "Did you hear what your father said?" Dude, that's a question that could have eternal consequences. It is a lot of pressure. And my family took this very seriously, and I'm thankful that they did. But in my house, you know, we didn't say gosh or golly. That's taking the Lord's name in vain. That's one of the top 10. You do not mess around with one of the top 10. My Christian and Hebrew friends could tell you that. I can see maybe not a lot of you are circumcised. Okay. It's a big deal. I mean, you wouldn't think anything of saying, "Oh my God." In my house, something like that slip out, my mom would come down on you hard. That meant the rod of correction. Now, the wise man said, "Spare the rod, spoil the child." Now, that's kind of archaic language. Basically, I'll break it down for you. When your kid does something wrong, you spank them. Otherwise, your friends won't want to come over and visit. And I'm telling you, there were no spoiled kids at the Ketcherset house. None. I mean, now some of us went from ripe to rotten, but none of us were spoiled. For those of you born after the Reagan administration, the rod of correction is really just anything at hand. A belt, a wooden spoon, a piece of Hot Wheels track, just anything that could be vigorously applied to your posterior to remind you, we don't use words like that. My mom said, "We're fixing to go round and round." That meant she was going to grab you by the arm with one hand, take the rod of correction in the other hand, and start in on you, and you were going to start running, trying to get away, but she was the pivot point. It was aerobic discipline back in those days. Two birds, one stone. She was like, "I'm gonna wear you threadbare." Now, you know how the heel of your socks looks after 7 or 8 years? Not really a hole in it, but you can see through it. That's threadbare. That's what your britches were gonna look like when she got done with you. It was serious. So started out life as a PK, still a preacher's kid. It's just now I've got the MPB to go along with it. It's the cherry on top. I've got this friend, Howard. He had a radically different upbringing than me. He's a confirmed bachelor, but he insists on sharing his opinions of marriage and sex. Drives me crazy.
I'm staying single because, hey, everybody knows that marriage is the death of sex.
I'm like, Howard, I don't think that's the reason why you're not married. I don't know if it's his personality, his voice, the goiter. It's hard to say. But marriage is not the death of sex. I mean, if Howard were to get married, his chances of actually having sex would go through the roof. The reason I got married was to have sex. And I was not disappointed.
Howard's like, "You know, the Bible is just a book of rules designed to keep me from having any fun."
I'm like, "Dude, the first commandment on the first page is to be fruitful and multiply. I mean, surely that's a commandment we could all get behind. I mean, come on." My dad's like, "At least I've kept one of the commandments." He and my mom have 6 kids. 6. 2 parents, 6 kids. That was a common ratio back then. Now it's more like 6 parents to 2 kids, but different story. Different story. My mom always made, I've got 3 siblings who have birthdays in the month of September. 3 of the 6, birthdays in the month of September. I was in high school before I figured out how my parents were bringing in the new year. My mom always made black eyed peas for New Year's. She said, "Now we're doing black eyed peas. It'll bring good luck." You know, anybody else black eyed peas on the New Year's? Yeah, yeah. Apparently, they're also a powerful aphrodisiac. Yeah. Yeah. My dad was like, "Now listen, son, you want to make sure you have your education, your career, your finances all well settled before you get married. That's why I waited until I was 19. High school diploma? Check. Promising career in the carpet cleaning industry? Check. Girlfriend pregnant? Yeah. You know, with all that going for us, a lot of people think, wow, it's probably just been an unbroken string of green lights for y'all. And it has been good. It has. But it hadn't been all been rainbows and roses. I mean, we've had our troubles. We had our first real fight, the first real fight on our honeymoon. It was over money. Yeah. You know, we got married over in Abilene. It was a destination wedding. Honeymooned in Dallas. And you know how you splurge on your honeymoon. You spend more money than you should. I would have gone bigger if I didn't know it was the last vacation before retirement. But, you know, we're over here. We're eating at a fancy restaurant. You know how you do. I think the restaurant's still here. Olive Garden? Anyway, we had a coupon. Anyway, we got down to the end of the meal, and we had a disagreement over how to split the check. Yeah, I'm an idiot. Here's the thing. I mean, you know, I had been doing things the normal way for 19 years. And then all of a sudden I get married and poof, everything changed. You know, culture shock. I was not prepared for it. I mean, I walk in and she's like, "Now remember, fella, I like my towels folded in thirds, not in half." I'm like, "I'm gonna be folding towels? What? What? It's like I got dropped into an alternate universe. What? You know, early on, here's the thing, you know, trying to figure this thing out, you're swimming in deep water. I mean, you don't really know how to do this thing. I'm thinking, you know what? My gut told me, honesty, sincerity, this is how we will get along together. That made sense to me. But I learned you have got to distrust your instincts. Distrust, I'm telling you, it is the foundation of a happy marriage. I mean, she's like, "Hey, fella, should I wear the black sweater or the sparkly top to the Christmas party?" At this point, I'm thinking honesty and insincerity. I'm like, "I don't care." That may have been the most honest thing I had ever said in my life. I found out that's apathy. You cannot build a lasting relationship on apathy. I've learned to say, "I don't know, babe. I mean, you look so good in both of them." Now, that is indifference. You can build a lasting relationship on indifference. It can be done. Oh, we. But here's the thing. I mean, if I come home and I say, "Hey, babe, where do you want to have dinner?" And she says, "I don't care." You've got to learn to distrust your instincts here, fellas, because it means something almost entirely different than what it sounds like. I mean, if I take her to Long John Silver's because I think she doesn't care, I don't need to be shopping for joint cemetery plots, okay? I'm gonna die. I'm just not gonna be buried next to her. That is not apathy. That is not indifference.
That's a test. That is a so distrust, I'm telling you. Lean into it. It will be helpful. I will say this. Fortunately, you know, I did lean it. We've been married now for almost 41 years. Can you believe that? Almost 41 years. And after being married for over 40 years, making love is a little bit like being TSA pre-check on a flight. It's quicker and easier to get to the gate. You just have to book it at least 72 hours in advance. And you do have to take your shoes off. The Bible says when people get married, the two become one. For a lot of couples, the question is which one? Obviously, in our case, we've been working for over 40 years to try to become more like Jeannie. I mean, that's what we've been doing. And it's working out well. It's all right. We did end up having 3 kids, which is awesome, and they're great. They're all grown now. But when our daughter was born, she did not know how to swallow. We literally had to teach her to suckle so she could eat to survive. But lying, that came naturally to her. I don't know how that fits with the evolutionary story that we're all a part of, but that does not seem like adaptive behavior. I mean, crazy. This child, before she was potty trained, she was routinely committing 4 of the 7 deadly sins. I mean, we didn't have to teach her how to be greedy, get jealous, or gaslight granny. I mean, she was a natural. But here's the thing, she wasn't exceptional. When our son was born, he made her look like a rank amateur when it came to laziness and lust. I mean, yeah, we're hardwired for vice. We are. I mean, there's no other way. Hardwired for vice. And I don't know whether we've discovered also early on that if you've got a toddler in the house, peace and quiet are not necessarily a good thing. You know what I'm saying? And chances are very good he's over in the corner concentrating on filling his britches up. But, or worse, one day I walk into the bathroom and our daughter pulls her little hands out of the toilet. They're blue. I know put phone in potty, which is crazy. Not because the phone was in the potty. I mean, obviously the phone was in the potty. But because this child had never uttered an uncoached please or thank you. But here she is, all on her own, lying in complete sentences. What is happening? I mean, we've got to spend so much time teaching them how to be good, but the bad, I mean, they're learning the bad on their own. I don't know. Instincts, I don't know what it is. But that day when in the bathroom, I'm like, I think we may be hardwired for stupid also. I mean, come on. Yeah, we get the vice from Adam and Eve, but I think we also get the stupid from them. Because all God's children got some stupid. We do. I mean, let's face it, Adam and Eve were not that bright, okay? I mean, I know they had it tough. I mean, it's essentially the pilot episode of Naked and Afraid. I get it. But, I mean, how dumb do you have to be to run around naked all the time? You can't have a serious conversation with a naked person. I don't care if you are married to him. I mean, come on! Look, a man's IQ goes down by 26% when he's around a naked woman. It's just science. It goes down another 16% if he's naked too. I mean, no good decisions have ever been made under those circumstances. None. What was Adam thinking? Get some leaves on that woman. I mean, come on. Oh, and Eve. Whew. I mean, she's taking advice from a talking snake, okay? Seriously?
But to be fair, I think the snake may have been so persuasive because he was the first person she had ever talked with who looked her in the eye. I mean, there's no way Adam's operating at 100% when Eve offers him a bite of that apple. I mean, she's naked, and she has prepared dinner. I don't know what you know about the way to a man's heart, but she pretty much covered all the bases. Think about it. God cursed Eve for her part in this. Her curse was to want to be with Adam. That was her curse. How dumb do you have to be for God to curse someone else with your presence? They were idiots. Look, they could eat literally anything on God's green earth, but one thing. They took a cheat day on the easiest diet ever. You know, until recently, most people didn't think it was possible for a stupid person to become an attorney. I am living proof that it can be done. I passed the bar exam, no trouble, but managed to fail a field sobriety test without ever having taken a drink. Let's see Rudy Giuliani do that. I don't know about you, when I get pulled over, I'm nervous. Get pulled over, the police officer wants me to get out of the car. Oh boy, my anxiety through the roof, and I'm like, hearing what the officer is saying, but I'm not comprehending it. You know what I mean? Got a little badge on that says DWI Task Force, and I'm starting to get, she wants to see if I've been drinking. I got that. But I know nothing about drinking and less than that about field sobriety tests. I'm thinking she probably wants to check my breath. That makes sense to me. She reaches into her pocket. She pulls out this thin tube. And so I'm like, I'm going to blow in that tube. So I'm like, ha. Well, as soon as I start to blow, she moves it. Now I'm like, ha. She's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I thought you wanted to test my breath. She's like, this is a pen. I'm like, oh. She's like, are you crazy? Do you even know what today is? Now, I did not know it, but in that moment, she had switched from field sobriety to mental competency. I mean, the last time a woman asked me, do I even know what today is, I was in serious trouble. But even in my adult state of mind, I knew I wasn't married to this woman. So I'm like, is it your birthday? Anybody else been time in jail recently? Oh, wee. I am an idiot. I like to refer to myself as a recovering attorney because I am addicted to making things overly complicated. It's a problem for attorneys. We get high on making things harder than they have to be. That way we can charge more. I could take a great 2-page contract and turn it into a 25-pound quagmire of clauses, covenants, caveats, conditions, contingencies, and convolutions. No trouble. I think, you know, my wife refers to it as compulsive mansplaining. The technical term for it is logorrhea. Logorrhea. It's related to diarrhea. It's just a different port. It's a serious problem. It would be nice if there was a recovery program for attorneys like AA is for alcoholics, you know, with the meetings and the sponsors and the relapses. Hi, my name is Clarence. I'm a recovering attorney. Jargon and legalese are my drugs of choice.
I was this close to my 1 month chip. Client questioned a bill. Fired off a demand letter with party of the first part, quid pro quo, and cease and desist, all in the first sentence.
The problem with these recovery programs is you have to admit that you have a problem. And I don't know whether you know this or not, but attorneys admit nothing. So, not gonna work. I started out my professional career as a lawyer. Now I'm a pastor. Miracles can happen. It's crazy because now, as a pastor, if I help guilty people go free, I'm considered a hero. Instead of rich. To be honest, which is now required, I got tired of having a job where I had to know all the rules and wanted one where I could just make some of them up. I'm at that age where we're getting close and we're thinking about retiring. And met with my financial planner. He's like, you may want to stop by Walmart on the way home. Get fitted for a blue vest, because if you retire, you're going to be spending some time as a greeter just to make ends meet. But my wife is like, hey, fella, you know, I think we should sit down with a marriage counselor before we jump off into this retirement, make sure our relationship is in a good place. I'm like, yeah, if I have to sit down with a marriage counselor, I'm not going to quit working. You know what I'm saying? I am not doing that. So we're at the counselor's office. It's not what you think. I mean, the flat earther in me was like, dude, you may want to distrust your instincts on this one. Because I don't know whether retirement's more like an extended vacation or an extended conversation about money. I don't know if it's an extended vacation or more like trying to decorate the Christmas tree together. I mean, we cannot do that. So, anyways, we're sitting, and the counselor had asked us to do some personality profiles. Have you ever done these personality profiles, you know, just to make sure, you know, so we can talk about styles and blah, blah, blah. The first one I ever did was when I went to work for the city attorney. We did the Myers-Briggs. It was this kind of team building thing, you know, and I sit down with, it's the kind of thing where you answer 100 would you rather questions so a stranger can tell you what your wife and friends are afraid to say, that kind of thing. I go into the consultant and he's like, oh, this says that you are an ENTJ. I'm like, I'm sorry? He said, yeah, you're an ENTJ. I said, I'm pretty sure I'm straight. He's like, no, this is not sexual orientation. This is personality. I said, oh, you confused me with all the initials. He's like, an ENTJ, that's pretty rare, really. I'm like, oh, rare like a diamond. He said, maybe more like peculiar, like wasabi. You know, the kind of thing that even the people who like it only want a little bit of it. Needless to say, I'm a little skeptical of the personality profiles. I think it's because I'm a Sagittarius. Anyway, we sat down with this counselor, and she goes, now this first assessment that we did, it designates your style as one of four animals. I found out I'm an otter. I'm an otter. My wife, she's a lion. I'm like, what? She goes, no, Tim. It's not a value statement. These animals are equal. I'm like, seriously? I'm an otter. She's the queen of the jungle. She's a lion. I'm a weasel that can swim. It seems like they may be different.
Well, now this next one's the Enneagram, and it designates your style as a number. And now, Tim, all the numbers are equal.
I mean, it's just not good at math either. Come on.
She goes, now, Tim, you're a number two. You're number two. I'm like, well, I hope it's like a number two yellow pencil, because otherwise I don't know of a good number two. I mean, come on. She goes, no, Tim, two is good. It just means that you're a helper. You're a helper. Now, Jeannie, you're a three. That means you're an achiever.
I mean, come on. She is an achiever lion. I am a wasabi helper otter. I do not think I've got the energy to retire and be married full time. Hey guys, that is all for me. You have been very kind. Hey, thanks for rolling out tonight on behalf of all the comics who you came to see tonight. God bless and be safe going home.